If you would please find Psalm 19. We have been working through the Psalms a little bit at a time. Our original goal was to try to do 10 a week. That would have taken us 15 weeks. We have fallen somewhat behind that pace. Prognosis now is about a year and a half. We may end up talking only about Psalm 19. There's so much packed into it. I hope that you've done your homework of reading the Psalms about 5 or 10 ahead. I hope you've done the special work of taking a close look at Psalm 22, 23, 24 to try to look at those three as a trilogy. But we'll probably work on that next Sunday. I do need to tell you that next Sunday you should prepare for a few more people being in here. We're going to combine the 11 o'clock class with you that day. They're going to go to the traditional service, or at least that's what we're setting up for. And we'll teach one Sunday, and Barb and I will be able to be in the choir both hours. The heavens declare the glory of God. The vault of heaven, the firmament, King James says, proclaims his handiwork. Day speaks of it today. Night to night, hands on the knowledge. In the message it says, Madam Day holds classes every morning and Professor Knight lectures every evening. Their words aren't heard. Their voices are not recorded. But their silence fills the earth, the message says. Unspoken truth is spoken everywhere. There's a shift in the middle of verse 4. There's a shift in the middle of verse 4. Because instead of explaining what the created order says about God, the psalmist begins to talk of God himself. God has made a home in the heavens for the sun, which bursts forth like a radiant bridegroom after his wedding. It rejoices like a great athlete eager to run the race. The sun rises at one end of the heavens and follows its course to the other. Nothing can hide from its heat. There's another shift in verse 7, and this shift is more profound. You have couplets for chapter 7, for verse 7, verse 8, verse 9. Can you see the structure of the couplets? Can you see what I'm talking about as you read ahead just a little bit? The instructions of the Lord are perfect. And what effect do they have? They revive the soul. The decrees of the Lord are trustworthy. With what effect? They make wise the simple. The commandments of the Lord are right. With what effect? Provide joy, bring joy to the heart. The commands of the Lord are clear. To what effect? Mine says giving insight for living, which is slightly different, but I think a little bit more to the point. Reverence for the Lord is pure, lasting forever. That was verse 9. The fear of the Lord, this translation says, is pure, lasting forever. The laws of the Lord are true. What does it say?
Altogether righteous.
Mine says each one is true. Yours says altogether righteous. Do you see the change in the couplets at verse 9? Verse 7 and 8, each couplet is telling you an effect. You get to verse 9, it begins to comment on that attribute itself. Reverence for the Lord has a purity to it that lasts forever. The laws of the Lord have a permanence. Truth is embodied in them. speaking of that entire set, verse 10 begins. The word they starts off verse 10 for me. Does that do that for you?
Yes.
I believe that reflects back all the way through verse 7, 8, and 9. Either that, or if you want to look at the individual things, the instruction of the Lord, the decrees of the Lord, the commandments of the Lord, the commands of the Lord. There's an interesting difference between those two. Reverence for the Lord and the laws of the Lord. These things are more desirable than what?
Gold.
Even the finest gold, they're still more desirable than that. It goes on just a little bit. They are also sweeter than honey. Even honey that's dripping from the comb. You ever had honey that was dripping from the comb? Turns out I didn't. That's because the honey was dripping in the basement of my mom and dad's house. And the honeycomb was filling the wall behind the closet on the third floor. And it had made its way down to the house and was dripping on a concrete floor in the basement. They used to park cars down there. My dad never was much for garages, so we never used it for that. Probably wouldn't have worked anyway because there was a support pole, a temporary support pole he had put right in the middle of where the engine would have gone if you'd driven the car in there. But there was this sticky stuff on the floor. We began to look up. There's sticky stuff on this joist up there. It took us a while to figure out this thing was up there on that top floor. More desirable than gold, sweeter than honey. You would think verse 11 would be a parallel to those. More than this in this way, more than that in that way. Verse 11 is totally different. What does verse 11 say?
Them, your servants.
Mine says they are a warning. More precious than gold, sweeter than honey. But they represent a warning. It also represents what? Not still in verse 11. Not just a warning. What else?
The great reward.
A reward that comes when? When you keep it. How are we doing on keeping it?
Not so good.
Not so good. I need you to learn that little phrase. How are we doing? Not so good. That's the phrase. I've listened to John Boy and Billy just a little bit too much. I haven't listened to them in years, but that's still ingrained in me. Do you see the power of verse 12 in the context of everything that's gone before? There's about three transitions, maybe four, in this psalm. This is the biggest one. The commandments are a warning and a reward if you keep them. And what does verse 12 say? How can I tell? There are things I'm doing that are not in keeping with who God is and my relationship with Him. And I'm completely unaware of some of it. How can I know all the sins lurking in my heart? My translation uses the word lurking. What does yours use there?
You have my hidden faults.
Yours just says hidden.
Willful.
Verse 12 in this one, who can detect his own failings? That's a pretty big challenge. I think it was the Scottish poet Robert Burns who said in a Scottish accent that I will not try to replicate. Oh, that someone would give me the gift to see me as others see me. Remember that? Who can detect his own failings? And so the psalmist pleads with God. Over here it says wash. Over here it says cleanse. I'm still in verse 12. What word does yours use there?
Quit.
Acquit.
Give.
Really? That's an interesting twist.
Give my hidden faults.
Cleanse me from those hidden faults, which I think carries with it something different from acquit. Wash me. Wash away my hidden faults carries something different from forgive. Verse 13 in the New Living Translation says, keep your servant from deliberate sins. Don't let them control me, but This translation on my left says it better. And from pride, preserve your servant. Never let it be my master. What's the one attribute that people can have that makes it really hard for God to work with? Pride. Because pride says, I don't need God. And the psalmist seems to understand that. From pride, preserve your servant. Never let it be my master. In this way, I can be above reproach and free from grave sin. And the verse that closes this psalm is one of the most powerful in the whole of the psalm. How many of you can quote it?
Let the words of my mouth,
and the meditations of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer. There's another place in Psalm where it says, Thy word have I hid in my heart, that I may not sin against thee. What do you want to hide in your heart? That's a pretty good one. This psalm, beginning as it does, looking at the whole of the universe and how wonderfully the created order reflects the glory of God, coming all the way down to the intricacies and the hidden parts of the human heart, and recognizing without God's help, there's not much hope.
Right back on top of the sermon.
Yeah, yeah.
This particular psalm, I know it may be simple sounding, but for me, and I fail miserably like everyone else, I'm sure, the litmus test is to say, in the case for your thinking and thoughts, or your deeds, and being ready to say, what would Jesus do? And that really changes your whole thought process, really.
That's been a real helpful thing. How long has that little phrase been out, the little wristband? Maybe 15 years now? Maybe a little more, maybe a little less? That physical reminder that some people used to wear on their wrist, maybe you still do.
I do the same thing about watching television. I mean, some of the programs on TV are very racy, and like, what would you do if you just walked in and you were watching this? The answer is, you'd be embarrassed. I don't like it.
I'll flip that one around a little bit. What if the first program my mother had seen on a television was one of these? I would never have had a television in my house. The coarsening of American entertainment has been slowly, slowly, slowly moving. Until now, we almost just blasé. We shrug it off. But if the first televisions had that stuff on it, there would never have been second television.
My Anglican priest used to say that more evil can enter through your eyes than any other way into your soul.
Yeah. I'm fortunate. I have noticed a tendency lately that my eyes will actually be closed. The remote will still be going. But I'm sure none of you are guilty of that. Okay, Psalm 20. I want to start this one by asking you, I'm assuming that a few of you may have done your homework, but a few of you may have read this, okay? What jumped out at you when you were reading this one? Did anything jump out at you? And what I'm looking for is the kind of things we've looked for before, something that in the structure and the layout and the wording of the psalm begins to be noticed. Anybody notice anything? As I say, if you've read this, you may have noticed something.
Each one of my verses starts with the word "may," just about.
Like I said, you may have noticed something. If you have read that. If you go through, mentally if you will, do not use a pen that bleeds through, but if you have a pen that you know doesn't bleed through, underline everywhere you see the word "may." How many are there? I count 7 in the first 5 verses. And immediately, you know something. This is not like any psalm we've looked at before. What's the psalmist doing? This is an intercessory prayer for you. The psalmist is praying for somebody else. Probably for a group of somebody else's. And what's the first prayer? What's the first one? In times of trouble, may the Lord do what?
Answer
your cry. Not just here, but hear an answer.
To keep you from all harm.
Yeah. I like the hear an answer. Mendelssohn wrote a setting for an oratorio he called Elijah. In the middle of this thing, the choir is giving voice to the prophets of Baal. And they're crying, hear an answer, hear an answer, hear an answer. And what came? Nothing. The prayer is, the God who does hear will answer. Sometimes his answers are no, sometimes his answers are not yet, and sometimes his answers are silence. And that's tough to deal with. What's the second may that's here? It's still in verse 1, I think. Do you have a second may? Yeah, interesting. He doesn't say, may the God of Jacob. Mine says, keep you safe from all harm. Yours says, protect you. Doesn't, that's not what it says. What does it say? May the name of God. What does that mean? You've been in here a while, which means a few of you might have some answers. Dave's been off at another place, so we'll give him a little bit of a respite today. When it says the name of the Lord, what's the psalmist say? Is it the pronunciation?
No.
Adonai? Elohim? Yahweh? Is that the point? I'll give you a little clue. No. What is the psalmist meaning when he says, may the name?
Powering.
In Old Testament times, for people here in this part of the world, names had significance and power. I remember this wonderful moment in a movie that I do not recommend. I absolutely do not recommend this movie, so I won't tell you what movie it is. And if you know which movie it is, shame on you. But in this movie, there's a girl and a boy, and the boy asks the girl her name, and she gives them the name. And it's in a foreign language, and he says, what does that name mean? And she says, it means the sun rising over the beautiful mountains as the trees sway in the breeze. She then says, what's your name? And the guy says, Nick. And she says, what does that mean? And his answer is, doesn't mean anything. It's just something my father thought of while he was shaving. We've lost the sense of the power of names. We've lost the sense of the power of names. When you read through the Bible, especially in the Old Testament, you hear them speaking of the name. The name of the Lord is a strong tower, it says in another place. The name of the Lord is rock. The name represents the characteristics, the attributes, the functioning of God. I can trust who God is. I can trust His character. I can trust His attitude toward me, which is what? Both love and encouragement towards. May the name of the God of Jacob keep you safe from all harm. What's the third one? This is verse 2. What's the third one? May he send you help from his sanctuary and strengthen you from Jerusalem. What's in Jerusalem? The temple. He's making a distinction. From his sanctuary, you're talking about heaven. From the Jerusalem, he's talking about the temple. Verse 3. What's this one? This is the fourth one, I think.
Remember all your sacrifices.
May he remember all your gifts, all your sacrifices, and look favorably on your burnt offerings. May he accept your worship. May your worship be acceptable. Verse 4 is stunning. What does it say?
Desires.
Can I pause there for a minute? I'm a Christian. Does that mean I can do just anything I want?
No.
Yes. Because what God is doing is He's trying to adjust the desires of my heart to line up with the desires of His heart. And when that comes, He blesses that. Don't miss this piece. We have polluted that phrase, the desires of one's heart, to where we think that that's ugly. It's the highest aspiration God has for me, is that what I really, really want to do lines up with what's best for me in His eyes. And when that happens, may that alignment begin to produce fruit. We've got something loose in our world called prosperity gospel. If you pray the right way, you'll have money. If you pray the right way, you'll be rich. There's something sick about that. There's something sick about that. And it's loose, and it's big, and it's out there, and it's attractive to people. And they're going to seize on this verse, and they're going to make it focus on money. That's not where it is. May He grant the desires of your heart and make your plans succeed. But that begins with aligning my heart with His heart, aligning my plans with His plans. And then you start to see things happen. Tom, I saw your hand.
You asked, can I do anything I want? And you answered yes. I bet if you had rephrased it and said, may I do anything I want?
Oh, I think I phrased it pretty provocatively to try to get the reaction I got, which means I didn't phrase it fairly. The question is, if you can see what God is doing to alter what's happening at my heart level to where I become more like Jesus, where what I do is more like what Jesus would do, if I really, really want that, God honors that. I'm not sure that's what this verse is saying, but I think it is. Verse 5. All of a sudden, this is no longer what God is doing. This goes to what we're doing. What does He say?
We will rejoice.
May we, God's people, do what?
Shout for joy.
Shout for joy. When? When we hear of God's victory. May we raise a victory banner in the name of our God. I felt like putting a banner across the front of the church when I heard Michael Clark talk about his granddaughter. I felt like putting a banner across the front of the church when I heard that when Caroline and Dan were in that awful accident, the car that was straight in front of them, the car that they were pinched into and accordioned into, belonged to their son's best friend. And the first person to come to them was somebody who knew them and could give them comfort. I hinted at that in my email. I want to reach.
Everybody survived that way because we saw that.
Yeah, you saw the. It was bad. Victories come. A little child gets a book to take home. After that book is. They're helped to read that book, and then they get to take it home. Somebody gets some food who otherwise is going to starve. Somebody gets a Christmas present, I think, of all the things that Lois leads us in. Somebody needs a friend in a prison. Bob's showing us how to do that. Somebody needs a meal at Good Samaritan. Bible says at one point, one of the greatest things is when we are able to accept the thanks that people give to God because they don't know where else to give them. It's a really interesting verse. If I remembered where it was, I'd tell you where it is. It's over in the New Testament. What's the last one?
May the Lord fulfill your petition, all your petitions.
May the Lord answer all your prayers. That's a pretty good list, folks. That's a pretty good list. Who wrote the psalm? Can you go back to verse 0? Who wrote the psalm?
David
wrote the psalm. Verse 6. Can you read that knowing that David wrote it? What does it say? Mine starts with the word now, implying that some things have happened. And David, looking at those things, says, based on this, now I know that the Lord rescues his anointed king. What had happened to David at various points in his life? He'd been running for his life in front of this army or that army. I know that the Lord rescues his anointed king, and he will answer him from his holy heaven and rescue him by his great power. Some nations boast of their tanks and their rockets. Does yours say tanks and rockets at that spot? What does yours say? Okay, the technology has improved, but we're still at the same place. Some people boast in the power of their rockets and the power of their artillery and the power of their tanks and their airplanes. But we boast in the name of the Lord our God.
This translation says trust rather than boast.
Trust is probably better than boast at that spot. We are out of time. And boy, do I want to talk about 21. Can I take 4 minutes and talk about 21? Let me tell you, rather than try to draw it out of you, when I look at Psalm 21, I start to see patterns. Just like that word may in chapter 20. Psalm 21, I start to see patterns. Here's what I see. I see in the first verse, the king. Second line, he. You give him victory. Verse 2, you give him, you withhold nothing, he, you welcome him. Crown on his head. He asks you. The king is there in those pronouns, he and him, he and him, he and him. Right through. You see that? But I also see you and your. Do you see that? How the king rejoices in your strength, O Lord. He shouts with joy because you give him victory. He doesn't shout for joy because of his own victory. He shouts for joy because you give him victory. You have given him his heart's desire. You have withheld nothing he requested. Do you see an echo for the whole of Psalm 20 in what you just read? Do you see that all coming in? That alignment preceding this is implied. Verse 3, you welcome him back with success and prosperity. You place a crown of finest gold on his head. He asked you to preserve his life and you granted his request. The days of his life stretch on forever. Your victory brings him great honor. You have clothed him with splendor and majesty. Do you see how you and you and you and you and him and him and him are walking right along? This is a picture of what's happening between the king, who is David, and the Lord. And the psalmist is bringing this to mind. Who's the psalmist in Psalm 21? That's David. Verse 7, the king trusts in the Lord, for the unfailing love of the Most High will keep him from stumbling. And verse 8, it flips a little bit. You will capture your enemies. Your strong right hand will seize all who hate you. You will throw them. Do you see the them? Where are they going to throw them? In a flaming furnace. The Lord will consume them in his anger. Fire will devour them. You will wipe their children from the face of the earth. They will never have descendants. There's imprecations against those who would oppose what God is trying to do. Verse 13, rise up, O Lord, in all your power, with music and singing, we celebrate your mighty acts. The king now includes the people in the conclusion. This sets us up to take a look next week at Psalm 22 and 23 and 24. It would be appropriate to do that either on Palm Sunday, we didn't quite get there, or to do that on Easter. We're going to do that on Easter. Be ready for a few extra people in here. Be ready to welcome them. Try not to treat them all as visitors. Hopefully a few will be. But some of them are old hands. They're just in the other hour. Let's have a word of prayer as we go. Our Father, we thank you for the time that you've given us. We thank you for these words mostly coming from your servant David, that upon close inspection reveal something really important. You want us to have the desires of our hearts. You want our hearts to be mended, our hearts to be made whole, our hearts to be filled with your Spirit, and then for us to begin to want the same things you want. Help us understand the insight that that thought brings. For we pray all this in your Son, Jesus' name. Amen.